Today's date is June 28th, 2012. My name is Jonathan Gerland. Today I'm with Charles A. Havard and Richard Donovan. We're at the History Center in Diboll, and we're going to do an oral history interview with Mr. Havard. And if we could, Mr. Havard, we'll begin if you just state when and where you were born.
I was born in Lufkin, Texas, June 20th, 1935.
And where were your... Where was your family living at the time?
I believe I was living at Manning.
At Manning, okay.
I think so.
Did your father work for the lumber company there?
No, he farmed and worked for himself.
Okay. I guess the mill had just about shut down by then. 35, I think, is when it burned, or somewhere about that Who were your parents?
Travis Havard and Annie Weaver.
Okay.
Havard.
Weavers.
Yeah.
So we're familiar a little bit with the Weavers and the Havards in that part of the country.
I'm half and half.
You were telling me a little bit earlier about growing up in the Bellevue area, and I thought maybe we'd just start with going to school and things. Where did you start attending school?
I started school at Shawnee Prairie.
Shawnee Prairie, okay.
And I believe I finished the first grade at Shawnee Prairie, and we moved over here to Renfro Prairie, and I went to Ball Hill for about a half a year.
Okay.
And then we moved to Bellevue, and I started school at Sevalier in second grade.
Okay.
And I finished at Sevalier in 53.
You were telling me a little bit about growing up in Shawnee Prairie.
Well, it was... I was talking about those longleaf forests, and people probably won't visualize those trees, how tall and big they were in the woods. And the forest was clean. You know, you could ride a horse down through the woods, which you can't do now.
And, so it was open pine
forest, yeah.
Just a high canopy.
Right, and... It's just something that you won't ever forget if you see it. Of course, I ain't ever saw the big timber out in California and out in there, but I saw that here.
Any experiences of going to school during that time you want to share?
Well, we had old wood heaters and burn up on one side and froze on the other one. And
what did the school day consist of? Did you have recreation time?
I believe we had a 15-minute recess in the mornings, and 15 in the evenings, didn't we, Dick? Then we had a period that they'd let you play baseball or softball if you had a ball and a bat. If we lost the ball, we were just out of luck.
Jonathan, we had a game at that time called Deer and Dog.
Deer and Dog?
Yes.
You remember? Go ahead.
You remember?
I vaguely remember it. Maybe it'll come back when you
It's where all the boys were deer to start with. And you'd have one dog that was out in the middle of the open field.
And that was another boy.
Another boy. And you had a base on each or either side of the field. And the objective was is for all the deer to be able to move, and they had to move periodically from one base to the other base and go through the open field, and then the dog pursued them. And if the dog touched you, you became a dog. And so it was quite strenuous and rugged. I remember a guy named Tommy Noel got his leg broken.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
In a game of it.
Now, where was that? Was that when y'all were going to Zavala schools?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Great school there at Zavala, the old school.
They wouldn't let you dare play that today. That was that would be off limits. And there was a cucklebur or grass burr patch on the extremity of the area that we played in, and they had those, I recall it, those old purple pointed grass burrs.
Oh, them bad.
And a kid from right in there where Charlie was from, named Junior Havard, could take off and run out into that grass burr. Everybody was barefoot. And Junior could run out into that grass burr patch, and nobody
could catch him. Huh?
No.
He was pretty tough.
Well, talk a little bit now about going to Zavala School. You know, that was when you were in the second grade, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you remember anything specific about Zavala? Anything you care to share?
It was a big city to me then. And we, like I say, we played, appeared in the morning and appeared in the evening. And everybody carried their lunch.
How far away did you live from school there in Zavala?
17 miles.
17 miles.
Yeah.
How did you get to school?
I had an old long school bus. It had wooden benches. Went down to the center of it, back to back, and then one on each side. It held about 60 or 70 kids. And little kids started sitting down up front. And as the big ones got on, they'd just shove you back. If you wound up on the end down there, you got mashed pretty good. It was something else. There was two communities rode that bus, the Bellevue Bunch and the Sarin Bunch. And naturally, they didn't get along too good.
So those were the old school districts then, the Bellevue and the Sarin district.
Right.
And then y'all were consolidated into Zavala, I guess.
Right.
Okay.
And
Why didn't the two districts get along? Ever thought about that?
I don't know. That's just something.
Just the way
one
it was.
One of those big
huh?
boys would tell a little one, "You go hit that guy." Well, I can't do it. He said, "You want me to whoop you? You want him to whoop you?" And you go hit him, and that get the fight started. See, this guy'd take up for the little guy, and they was all the time doing something like that. The Harrises. And
what about the Donovans?
Well, Donovan lived over on the highway.
Okay. He was a city boy.
Yeah. The only time I ever saw him was at school, except when he started going to the river.
And the roads in and out of where he lived were not desirable.
No. Sometimes it got where a tractor couldn't even get up a hill. They were bad.
So that just meant you didn't go to school that day, huh?
That's right. But most of the time, somewhere way or another, everybody got that school bus through.
They got it through, huh?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. They'd leave early in the evening sometimes, going back home, too.
Do you remember who the bus driver or drivers were? Did anything stand
Clint
out
Weaver
in your memory?
Clint Weaver drove the first one I rode. Mervyn Modisette drove. And Buster Page drove. And my brother Travis Havard and Ernest Crane drove, and Jimmy Sam Modisette drove, and then myself and Sammy Ruth Palmer drove.
So you yourself, as you got older,
yeah.
drove? Okay.
Last year in school I drove. And
so you were going to school and driving the bus?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And one time it come up. Big flood, and it washed out over in the Shawnee Creek bottom. And they had boards up for the old bus to run across off the end of the bridge, and it fell in there.
Hmm.
And
was that when you were driving, or
no?
That
was when I was just
okay.
a kid. And after just talking about how bad the roads was,
right?
They didn't fix it like today. They'd fix that today. But then it. Probably took a month to get it fixed. And it was just kind of a backward, they just took their time about fixing the roads back then. They didn't spend a whole lot of money. And
this would have been the 40s during the war or just after, I guess both, huh?
It was probably long about then the war was still going on.
Okay.
And Then they separated people moved out and they separated the Bellevue district from the Sayre district on the buses. We got a small bus. And they got new commissioners and things like that, and the roads gradually got better. And when Willie Vanderline got elected commissioner, well, he built roads. And today, some of that's still his roads.
Willie Vanderline?
Yes.
You wouldn't by any chance know how to spell that, would you?
It's E-V-A-N-G-L-I-N-E, but that's probably not right, Jonathan.
Okay. Okay, that'll get us close.
He lived at Manning.
Okay.
And he started the good roads down there.
And what year did you graduate?
53.
You graduated Zavala High School in 1953. Did you play any organized sports teams?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I had more fun going to the games than I did playing.
Were you able to attend quite a few games?
Nearly every one of them, yeah, after I got up a teenager.
What sports did you enjoy? Well,
mostly we had basketball. Basketball. Was about all we had.
Yeah, that's right.
And
did you travel some and watch the games at other schools? Or
some.
Just, okay.
Some. We did that some.
Did you ever drive the bus by any chance when you go to games?
Oh, yeah. I'd carry the bus to the games at Zavala when my senior year when I was driving, which was okay with the superintendent.
Okay. So you carried other people from the community to watch the games?
Ride,
okay.
Ride.
Okay.
Grown-ups or whatever.
Tell a little bit about just growing up during that time. What did you do when you weren't going to school?
Fishing and hunting, or either work in the fields. One, you might have to chop cotton.
Let's talk about working in the fields first.
What? Oh, Lord. That chopping cotton was bad now. That's a slow going. And then
describe what you'd have to do, because I think most people today don't know what you're talking about.
Chopping cotton? Mm-hmm. Well, they planted it real thick in a row. And then when you thinned it out, well, they called chopping cotton, you thinned out, say, the width of the hoe. And then later on, after it grew up again, they send you back down through there, you hoed that cotton, get some more grass out of it. And then they plowed it, and it grew up, and you had to pick it. Which, that was a bad job for me, because I never could get no weight in that sack.
And, now, is this cotton on your family's land, or were you hired out for other people?
It was on family land.
Family land.
And, I hired out 2 days on Shawnee Prairie to chop cotton. 50 cents an hour. 12 hours a day. I knew it was a mistake. When I'd been there for about an hour or two, but I couldn't quit because Daddy would have sent me back, and I had to stay with it.
So you did 2 days, you said?
2 days.
2 days, that was enough,
that
huh?
Field. And I never will forget that. And every time I'd start to lean on that hoe, that man we was working for, he'd say, That was Preacher Jones up there at Shawnee Prairie, Dick. I don't know where you knew him or not. That was Jonell's, Jones' uncle.
Okay.
He was brother to
Sewell?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How many other people were working those 2 days that you worked?
It was about 8 or 10 of us.
8 or 10.
Probably that many, yeah.
So you were still living at home then?
You were
a child?
Yeah, I growed up 12, 13 years old, something like that.
What about around your own home? What type of work did you do? Did y'all have chickens? And
we had chickens, hogs, horses, and cows, and dogs. And, I had my chores in the evening, feed the horses, and all that was our job, you know.
Milk?
No, mama milked. And
what did y'all use the horses for?
Plow the field.
Plow the fields.
Yeah. Daddy got a tractor after we all left home. And you plow that field all day long. It's a pretty good job, too. And I miss most of that hard plowing because I was a little bit younger.
So you use horses and not mules?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Daddy liked horses. And maybe the neighbor over there liked mules. But horse seemed to me like mine's better. But a mule, they always said, take care of yourself. You aren't going to work that mule to death.
So the hogs you had them in penned in?
No.
Or out?
No. We run them
just
in the woods. And,
okay.
And every so often, you'd have to mark and castrate the boar hogs.
What was your mark?
On the ears.
Uh-huh.
What
was your family's mark? Do you remember? I mean,
swallow fork in the left, two swallow forks in the right.
Okay. Say that again.
Swallow fork in the left, and two swallow forks in the right.
Okay.
It's just like a V in a left and a W in the right.
Okay.
It's kind of about as good as I can describe it.
Is that something you registered in the courthouse?
Yeah, Daddy had that registered.
Okay.
Just like a brand, you know. And those hogs back then, they run in bunches. They run in up to 55, 60 head in a bunch, and they always run in a certain area. And Daddy had his hog dogs, and he'd go in the woods two or three times a week and check him hog. And he run hogs instead of cattle then. He liked hogs. And he had two hog dogs. He run with them. And I went with him several times to after I got big enough to keep up.
So how far away from where your house was did you have to go to round the hogs up?
2 or 3 miles.
2 or 3 miles?
Yeah. Yeah. We lived about a mile from the river.
Okay.
And up on up in the Piney Woods part. And those hogs, most of them run the river bottom on both sides of the river. And we had some pens in the woods also. And
how often would you go out and mark them? Every year?
Oh, as soon as the pigs got big enough to catch.
Did you ever, in rounding them up, did you ever round up pigs that were already marked by somebody else?
Sometimes. Most of the time, if it was very few, sometimes a bigger hog would come to your bunch. But most of the time, your bunch was, I guess you'd call it, segregated from the other bunch.
Hmm.
And if it was a bunch of pigs in there marked for somebody else's mark, well, they marked the wrong pig. And
so what would you do then?
I guess you'd have a friendly chat. I heard Daddy ask a man why he come and marked his hog one time. And he said, I didn't mark it. And he said, yeah, you did. And he told him about it. Yeah, he said, I did. And that was all that went. I don't know what happened about it. But people were pretty honest about that. There was a few that...
So who owned the land that the hogs ran on?
Carter.
Carter?
Carter Lumber Company.
Did y'all have to do any kind of arrangements with them, or just was it...
Back then, you didn't. It was an open range.
Okay.
And for hogs and cattle, you just turn them loose. And
did you ever get to know any... people from the lumber company? Did they have pasture riders or anything that you knew of?
I knew Needham Williford. I met him. He was their timberman in our area. He's a surveyor. And if you needed if you wanted to lease some land or something, that was the man you went to.
Okay.
And
what would you lease the land for?
Hunting.
For hunting.
Hunting and grazing, you know.
That was in later years, though.
Yeah.
That was after you.
This was what, 40s or 50s?
That's the 50s, probably.
Yeah, but in the 40s, there was very few pastures. There was a few. But, let's see.
There's one across the river, the Barnes.
Barnes pasture. That was there always, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you had, John Weaver had one, you know, for years. And then most of them around where we was at was just fenced to hold cattle, and you didn't pay the fence no mind. We didn't. We just went, kids went where they wanted to, you know.
Well, talk now about more along those lines. Kids going where you want to. You told me, you know, y'all anytime y'all had a mind to go to the river, y'all just go to the river.
We'd go to the river and go swimming.
Swimming.
And sometimes you carry a fishing pole and a skillet and a few biscuits or something with you. And 9 times out of 10, you wouldn't do no fishing, you do all swimming. And me and one old boy carried a skillet and everything down there one time. We was going to catch our dinner. We forgot our grease. We just boiled that fish in the skillet.
Boiled him in the river.
Yeah.
Huh? River water.
Yeah. Now, that river water made the best coffee in the world back then. But the later on years, you don't drink it no more or use it for anything.
Did y'all have any names to your swimming holes? Or?
Well, we went to the Robbins Camp.
Robbins Camp.
And we'd go up to the what they call the washout bend. And then we'd go to the Weaver Log Landing. And they had a baptizing hole, they called it, on up above that for all that. The Crane Settlement and Bellevue and all of them used to baptize up there.
Okay.
And
so these are all places where you could have swam any time of the, I mean, regardless of water level?
No. High water was a...
You didn't swim then, huh?
Well, we did, but it wasn't very safe. I mean, I wouldn't do it now, or I wouldn't advise any kids to do it. Didn't tell you that. No river got high. It was pretty rough. But we would go down there and we was kids a lot, and we'd have to swim to get to the river. And then when we got to the river, we'd have the banks, and we'd swim in that high water. And I don't know. We never thought about getting drowned or anything. Just
so the river was so high, it was out of its banks then.
Oh, a lot of times.
And y'all would have to wade to swim.
The old sloughs out there, we'd have to swim across them.
Huh.
And of course, we'd go down there and we'd stay a half a day or a day if we weren't working in the fields.
Yeah.
And we'd squirrel hunt in the summer. Take the old dog and squirrel hunt.
And Mr. Donovan liked to squirrel hunt with a .22. Did you use a .22 or shotgun?
I used .22.
Okay.
And, of course, a lot of times I used up a lot of shells, too. But I always hunted with a squirrel dog. Daddy always had a good squirrel dog, and I'd take him, go up and down them creeks, and that was good squirrel hunting. And Daddy and my other brothers, they'd hunt in the river bottom with a shotgun, you know. Still hunt, they called it. And hunt them cat squirrels. I never was good at that. I wasn't fast enough.
Was there ever any ducks? Did you ever do any duck hunting?
Well, I tried. But there was a lot of ducks down there then. Old big old green heads. But I never killed a duck till I was 40 years old. Them ducks were smarter than I was. But we killed a few deer.
Very few. They weren't very many.
No, they weren't too many. But we, like the deer, that was like beef back then to people who lived out in the country. I mean, if they killed a deer, they eat it all. They didn't, they stewed and canned, and they didn't lose no meat. and they were conservative with it. And they didn't kill them just for sport like a lot of people do now.
It wasn't sport hunting.
It wasn't sport hunting.
Subsistence hunting.
It was that. And we fished.
Tell about fishing.
Well, we fished with trot lines and throw lines and wire nets back then. And there was a few thread nets, but not too many people had them because you could go out there and build them wire nets. Back then, they was 8 foot long and 4 foot in diameter.
So these are hoops?
They made the hoops out of grapevines. Okay. And then they cut the little saplings for and put four of them on there, and that hold it together, and they wrap that chicken wire around them. You catch a few catfish, but mostly drum and buffalo. And
it was highly illegal, too. We didn't know it.
We didn't care. But I remember back then that if the game warden was going to come drag the river, seemed like somebody would send Daddy word. I'd get off the school bus one time, and the school bus driver told me, said, "Tell Travis, game warden coming down the river Wednesday." And because he sold those fish, see. And in the spring, he sold fish.
Where would he sell them?
In Lufkin. He'd, if we had an OA model, he'd put them in it and peddle them out there. And
sell them to some of the grocery stores or things? Or?
Well, not unless they caught a real big fish, but they sold a lot of them out, those scale fish out in the colored sections.
Okay. They just went there and sold them to whoever?
I mean, he went every Wednesday and every Saturday.
Wednesdays and Saturdays.
And they know when he's coming, and he had a route he went.
You said scale fish.
Carp and... They liked them buffalo and drum.
Drum.
I call them drum. I don't know it.
What'd y'all do with the catfish?
We sold them to catfish. These are sale and drums. Well, those people didn't like catfish because they say they're a scavenger. You know, and they don't like that. The cafes, the same if you caught a big catfish, would buy them. And
even there in Zavala.
I don't know whether they would in Zavala or not.
I sold some.
You did? Mm-hmm. We didn't.
Did y'all clean them and sell them, or just
if it was a big fish, you cleaned him.
Okay.
But the others you sold whole, you know. And
what about trying to keep them cool? Did there's any effort for that?
Put sweet gum limbs on them, you know, tops out a little sweet gums on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it mounted up there at what they call the cutoff. I believe that's what they call that.
Manning cutoff?
Yeah. There was a little store there.
Mm-hmm.
And Daddy'd get ice there sometimes and spread it. He'd throw in there, chip it up, throw it in there under them leaves. And that'd hold them. Because them drum buffalo die pretty quick anyway.
Yeah.
But they won't spoil for you.
So they were in the buckets or?
No, you just spread them out.
In what? In your
in the back of that old A model.
Oh, back of
it
the
had
car.
A
rumble seat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Back in those days, this ice company in Lufkin ran a route down through there and left ice at length, and then that Manning cut off, went on down to Zavala. Zavala had a pretty big ice house there.
Would they make ice there?
Or no, it's just it all had to be down there.
Okay.
And I remember old man, his name escapes me right now, but he was a one-armed man, and he had a horse and wagon, and they'd load that ice into that wagon, and he would drive all over the valley, and he'd sell 25 pounds here, 50 pounds there, that sort of thing.
So was it block ice?
Yeah.
Block
mm-hmm.
ice. Mm-hmm. How would they cut the ice?
The ice pick. The ice was already scored. It came out of the ice house scored.
Okay.
And you had a little sign. You hung, in later years, had a little sign, a little blue square sign about 12, 14 inches. And it had 25 here and 50 here and 100 here and 150 over here. And whatever you wanted, you rotated that sign to that. It was just a nail in the wall. It's nailed to the wall. You rotated that sign. What you wanted was upright. If you wanted a 25-pound box that day, you twisted it. And people had, quote-unquote, ice boxes in those days. Mm-hmm. And he'd come out there with those tongs and grab that piece of ice. And the kids were always trying to be present because when he chipped that thing,
you get them chips.
Splinters went flying all over everything, you know. And he didn't like that. Anyway, that's the way ice was dispensed in those days.
How would the big block of ice come in the delivery truck? Was it insulated in any way or just?
Yeah, they had a kind of, some of them, they had a tarpaulin they covered over it, and then they had sideboards on the old truck. And
did they use sawdust or anything?
Yeah.
Ice houses were laced with sawdust.
Laced with sawdust. And our first ice box was a wooden chest. And it was, the walls in it were thick and open from top. And then they came out with those upright ones. They was fancy. And
store-bought ones, huh?
Yeah. And then they come out with the that looked like a refrigerator you get now. That was, mm-hmm. But it was still an ice box. Ice went in the top up there. And we first automatic ice box we had was a kerosene one. Had a kerosene burner underneath, and that's the way it made the ice.
Hmm. And when did y'all get electricity?
When I was in 11th grade.
11th grade.
Yeah.
Now, y'all had electricity, Mr. Donovan, before then? Where
I always had electricity, although it was highly unreliable the first 4 or 5 years of my life. It just...
That's because you lived closer to Zavala, and yeah. Right on the railroad tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't get it till 11th grade.
11th grade, yeah.
You remember the first time you saw electricity? Or electric light or anything electric powered?
I guess at school.
At school?
Yeah.
What did you think? Do you remember that?
I just remember that was sure a good light.
So it was a light. It was a light then that
yeah.
First time you saw electricity.
We used kerosene lamps.
Uh-huh.
That's what we used. And lived in an old log house down there, Weaver's Bend. At one time, it had a carbide system for lights. They'd sold my granddaddy. And I never did see that work. But that was a... had a spotlight that big around on the front porch where you could turn it on, you know, and shine out through the field or whatever. But that's where I was living when we got electricity, was in the old log house.
So it was after the war then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Carbide tank set outside the house. They mixed water with them, and the little pipes went into all the light fixtures in the house.
Hmm. Yeah.
And you lit it just like you, you know, lit your lantern.
So what did y'all think about electricity?
Well, I loved it. We got that ice box, all that stuff, good stuff. Then we was uptown, man.
So you bought electric ice box?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe fans? Did you get some electric fans or anything?
I think they probably had one. We didn't ever get that. Hot and cold back then. I don't know, you never did think about it. If it was hot, you might not go to bed till about 10, 11 o'clock till it cooled off. But all the windows in a house was down low before they'd blow over your bed. If you know. Now they build them up higher, you know.
Yeah. You had high ceilings in your house, too, that helped,
yeah.
Too, probably.
Well, that old house didn't. It did at one time, and then they put a ceiling in it, and it was about an 8-foot ceiling then, but at one time it was just one big old room.
Hmm.
But those logs were about 12 inches in diameter, split in half, And that's what the whole house was built out of. And the cells were about 12 by 12 square. They'd hewed those.
Hmm.
And the fireplace was about, about 8 foot wide. But they had, before they could walk, they cooked in it and used it for heat also when it was built. But my granddaddy and him went in there and walled the sides in with some mud and rock and made it about 4 foot wide then. And that's what we used for heat. Like I say, you freeze on one side and burn up on the other.
Which house was that, Charlie?
That was the old log house that we lived down there in Weaver's Bend.
Did it burn?
Yeah.
Okay.
It burned.
Who built that house? Was it an ancestor?
Yeah.
Okay. one of the Weavers or the
Weavers? Weavers.
Weavers, okay.
Yeah.
So from your mother's family.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what Weavers it might have lived there?
No, Eli lived there.
Okay.
And I don't know who lived there before he did.
Eli Weaver?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But Larkin Weaver was his daddy, and he's the one that settled Weaver's Bend. So.
How many Weavers and Havards were there down there? Families. do you recall a rough number?
No, I don't.
Okay.
That'd just be hard to say, Coach. I'd leave out some of them.
Okay.
Live down there in one of them pig trails off back right there, just a little trail.
But everybody was more or less related?
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
I believe a Lufkin doctor owned that old house when it burned. Isn't that not right?
Yeah, Dr. Shepherd.
Thought
Dr.
So.
Shepherd, Mom and Daddy sold out to Red, used to be the VA officer in Lufkin. Well, they sold it to him and Mr. Shands, who owned the insurance agency. And later they sold it to Dr. Shepherd. And they claim lightning struck it and it burned.
Hmm.
And Dr. Shepherd's folks still own that place. And it was 72 acres, I believe.
That your family owned?
Uh-huh.
Okay. How much of that did y'all have under cultivation? Or
About 30, 35 acres.
About half of it then? Okay.
Yeah.
And the rest of it was?
Timber.
Timber.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all do anything to encourage timber growth, or do you remember any cuts during your time?
They cut the timber periodically, but they've uncut very small because, you know, you just didn't cut the small timber then. I know when Temple, it was Southern Pine then, bought it one time from Grandpa, and it was from 8 inches up with a 5-year option to get it off. So all them 8-inch ones was 10 by then.
Within 5 years.
Yeah. Right? You know, I guess that's the way you make money.
So all the logging by that time was done. How was the logging done?
With mules and trucks and mules. And I did see some logging down there on wagons, though.
Wagons?
Yeah. Menard Cryer and Nat Borkin put a sawmill down there one time, and they logged it with the people that hauled them logs in there with a wagon, log wagon. Mr. Modisette had the prettiest team of mules that you ever saw.
And it had been those 8-wheeled wagons?
No, was just
four-wheeled wagons
with tires on it, just like on a car.
Rubber tires in.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
His was, anyway. And I saw him carry a load in there one time. I was a pretty small kid at the time.
But Charlie, you probably logged some, did you not?
Yeah.
Travis did.
Yeah, I helped. I helped Daddy log. We logged with a team and a truck.
How'd you cut the trees?
Cross-cut saw.
Were you pretty good on the end of a cross-cut saw?
If I didn't ride it too much.
Were you always with somebody bigger or smaller than yourself?
There was always somebody bigger. You rode that saw, Daddy'd get you pretty quick. And I'd go help him cut a load and then help him get it out.
How far down did y'all cut them?
Oh, we cut about a foot off the ground.
Foot off the ground. Mm-hmm. So y'all got down, that's pretty low.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to stoop pretty good, huh?
Yeah, you was always humped over pretty good. But now, that river bottom I wanted to tell you about, when I was a kid, it had those oaks.
He's holding his hands out as far as he can stretch them.
As far as I can reach. That's right. They put one of them on the truck. On a truck and trailer.
One log of...
I've seen several of them.
Chunk of the tree, huh?
Go out down there at the Robbins camp. With the one log on that trailer, they was carrying it to the track. And,
to railroad tracks?
Uh-huh.
Now, which tracks would that have been?
That was Carter's.
To the Carter Tram
yeah.
Road. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was over, is that across the river or this side?
No,
of the
it was on this side.
Okay. So they were still using that tram road that
went
across
the
river.
Well, they built it back when we was kids.
Okay.
We had that small school bus then. And, because we'd come in and eat, and a lot of times we'd come down that hill there where you went to that old William Penn Cemetery. We'd come down that hill, and that train be across that road, you know. And
those steam engines?
Uh-huh. And they fired them with pine knots.
Pine knots. Describe that. What the steam locomotive, the train,
well,
and all that?
It didn't look a whole lot different from your later years, but behind it had a gondola full of pine knots, and they had them piled up periodically beside the tracks. I never was up close when they was, you know.
So you never knew any train crews or anything like that?
Oh, yeah,
anybody?
I knew Lee Outlaw. He was the engineer.
Really? Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Lee was an engineer on one of them trains. And
what about Amerine? Did you know anybody named Amerine?
No, I didn't.
Or Morrison?
No.
William J. Morrison?
We were, we didn't go too much. You can imagine back then living out that far, you didn't see too many people.
Okay.
And Lee was a personal friend of the family anyway. But he would always, if he was across the track, we'd get him to blow that train whistle. You could hear he blow a little lonesome whistle, man.
Jonathan, what you've got to recognize is he lived as remote as just about anybody that I ever knew.
We was the last house.
He lived in the last house in Weaver Bend, and it was a long way back there.
Yeah, it's like I say, we squirrel hunted the year around when I was a kid. And, of course, we carried the squirrel to the house if we killed one, too.
Mm-hmm.
You skinned him, dressed him out, and made dumplings with him, or fried him if he's tender, and things like that. But
Talk about a little more time on the river. Fishing and stuff. Did y'all use boats? Any?
Yeah. If anybody had one down there, we'd use it. But
did it have a motor on it?
No, we didn't have no motor.
No motor.
When I was a kid, we didn't have no motor. I remember the first motor Daddy got. It was what they called a Kettle, K-E-T-T-L-E. And the shaft stuck out behind like that.
More horizontal than vertical.
Yeah, it was back there like that.
And,
uh-huh. The old propeller was about that big around.
He looks like he's holding close to a foot.
Yeah.
A 12-inch diameter.
And it run about a mile an hour, 2 miles an hour. It was run off of a coil, T-mile coil, and telephone batteries is what we used on it. That's what it magneto style. And
so it was electric power or gasoline?
Gasoline,
okay.
And we used that thing. We'd paddled for years, you know, and he bought that thing for somebody. And
what were the boats made out of?
Cypress and pine.
Something. Homemade? Did y'all make them?
Yeah, made his own boat.
Made your own boat.
Mm-hmm.
Would they be sawn boards or carved out?
No, it'd be most of the time 12-inch boards.
Okay.
And if you get a wider board, you made the sides out of as wide as you could get.
How did you seal it? Seal where the boards would come together.
Well, some people used tar.
Tar?
Asphalt.
Asphalt.
That melt that asphalt, pour in there. But if you use real good wood carver, or some of them could pretty well seal them together.
The joints
together.
Yeah.
Sink that old cypress in the water and just submerge it.
Swell up.
And it sealed itself.
And that was the boat's one of the best boats in the world. Okay. The last one Daddy had was real good. A man by the name of Mr. Fuller made it for him. And he made it out of cypress, and it had the high sides on it, and it was made for a motor. He had a little old 5-horse motor he got to go on it. But he throwed that little old Kelly motor in a corner out there where he throwed his junk. And about 20 years later, a guy come by there and saw it, and he gave Daddy $15 for it. Ain't no telling what it was worth.
That's right.
And
where did he get the motor? Your dad?
I don't know. I never saw but two of them.
Hmm.
Charlie Havard had one. And then Daddy got that one. That was the only two of them I ever saw.
Now, your name is Charlie Havard also, so...
No.
Charles?
Charles.
Charles, okay.
Yes. Charlie was a cousin of Daddy's.
Okay.
He lived in Bellevue, too.
Okay.
He fished with those thread nets.
Any particular outings on the river you remember that are eventful? Any memorable occasions on the river? Fishing or swimming or?
Well, when we was kids, we went down there in Loggins Creek, and when it flooded, that creek cut out a big bank over here. And, it was about 10, 12 foot high, that bank was. That was our swimming hole. So we decided we'd dig us a cave. Every time it rained, we'd be down there swimming. We'd dig us a cave, getting it dry. And there was me and my brother and three more people. We had a cave dug pretty good, and that thing caved in on us. And it got everybody but me. And I got my brother out. And then we got another guy out, and he run for help. And we had that other boy out. We had him uncovered from the waist up when the whole community come down there. We was over there naked. And we had to swim across that big old hole to get to the other
that
side.
That was a close call.
Yeah, it was close. And,
how old were you then?
Oh, 7 or 8 years old,
okay.
I guess. Bryant, Jimmy Sam was still going to school. And that's about the closest call, I guess, I had. And then we moved on up our Weaver's Bend about the same year.
Do you remember... the cave there near Fort Turan on the Tyler County side?
I've never been to that.
Never been there?
No.
But did you hear about it when you were a kid?
Yeah. I heard about it. There's supposed to be a lead cave over there somewhere. You've heard of that?
It's its mouth of Shawnee Creek.
And did you ever find it?
Well, Jonathan and I have been there. We didn't find any lead, but we've been there.
Found no cave, huh?
Where supposedly used to mine it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going back to, that's where Hubert Cryer said it, where it was.
Uh-huh.
Growing up in Shawnee Prairie in that area, did you ever hear any stories about the Indians that might have lived in the area? Just, even if not anything specific, but any legends or about maybe the Shawnee Indians themselves?
No, I haven't.
Never did?
Okay. I never did. I don't know.
Did you know the Flournoys
growing
up down there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew. Well, I went to, started school with Pete. I went to school with him 1 year. We was about the same age, and of course everybody knew Mr. Flournoy. You know, I mean,
Later did his store some too.
Oh yeah, he carry on the book, you know.
Give you credit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody back then that lived up and down the river, they traded on the credit.
With Mr. Flournoy.
Him or somebody. Aaron Barge. It's about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then
what all would you get at Mr. Flournoy's store?
Just the necessary things, staples, you know. Well, you didn't buy no candy and soda waters.
No toys for the kids?
No, you didn't buy toys and stuff. You made your own back then. And then when they sold their cotton and things, they'd pay the bill.
So cotton was again the cash crop.
That was the money crop.
That's where you got paid money for. The other crops were for your own eating.
Yeah.
Trading, I guess.
You raised your corn, you fed your stock, and made meal, and peas, and things like that you ate and canned. You had to can it because you didn't have no deep freeze back then.
So talk a little bit more about that, about your diet. What did y'all eat and drink back then?
Peas and everything you grow on the farm we eat. And we eat a lot of deer meat, squirrel, chicken. And
what did you drink?
Water and tea.
Water and tea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you have tea all the time or only
tea
at certain meals?
Tea was a special.
But did you have it every evening?
No.
For supper?
No. We had milk.
Milk.
Okay. We drank a lot of milk.
When did you drink the milk?
Any meal. Yeah, we had plenty of milk. We kept the milk in the well.
Okay. Keep it cool?
Keep it cool. I thought that was cold milk.
What about butter? Did you have butter?
Oh, yeah. We had plenty of butter. We churned our own butter.
Churned your own butter.
Uh-huh. And,
Did you have plenty of sugar? Sugar and
sugar,
butter?
Salt? Sugar and meal and flour was cheap back then. We bought flour in like 25-pound bags. And sometimes I've seen Daddy get a 50-pound bag. You didn't buy small bag stuff. And
what about hunting? Talk a little bit about hunting practices and things back then.
Well,
you mentioned deer. Deer was a meat that was as common as maybe beef is today.
There's a lot of coon hunting went on.
Coon hunting.
That was for sport, mostly.
Coon hunting was for sport.
Yeah, of course, you had a coon on the table at Christmas with baked potatoes around him. That was one of my dad's specialties. He had to have it coon.
For Christmas?
Yeah. Mom would fix it for him. It's pretty good eating now. Kind of like pork. But I don't care for it now. I had enough of it.
So y'all had chickens, and that was, I guess, mainly for the eggs,
right?
We
had chickens, for the eggs, and then you ate chicken periodically. mm-hmm. on Sunday mostly.
Okay.
Just to lock your chickens up at night, Charlie?
No, they...
Dogs kept them?
They mostly roosted in trees.
Mm-hmm.
And the dogs kept the varmints away pretty much, you know.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your dogs. You mentioned them earlier that your dad always had.
He had good dogs. Good hog dogs.
Hog dogs.
Yeah. And it's amazing. As far as that dog could hear him or see him, if he wanted him to take them hogs, say, this way, he could holler at him and wave his arm. And them dogs would turn them hogs. He had one dog he called a drive dog, and that dog would lead, and that other one would keep him rounded up.
Hmm.
And when he, those bunches of hogs like I was talking about.
Yes, sir.
In particular, I told Dick about this. I went with him one time, and we rounded up a bunch across the river, and those dogs carried them up to the river, and they didn't go in the first time, and he had them to call them out, you know, and the hogs settled down, and he told them, get them going. I don't remember the exact words he used, but that dog enticed one of them old sows to follow him, and when she hit the water, all the rest of them followed her. And there was 55 head, and we carried them a mile up out of the house, and we didn't lose a hog.
Hmm.
The way he enticed them, though, was not by persuasion. Well, it was by persuasion, but it was not willingly that it was there.
Yeah. That dog would nip that old sow, you know, in the face and get her to fighting him, and she followed him right on in the river. And that dog went out the other side, and them hogs behind him.
Hmm.
You tell people about those dogs now, and they compare them with the dogs they have now, and it's completely different. The woods are different, and the dogs are different. And they got catch. What they carry a dog to catch the hog with now, and that's the only time they turn him loose. But, if we had a hog, most of the time we'd pin them hogs. We wouldn't catch just one hog. We'd pin them. And like we had a hog pen across the river, and where we'd go over there and mark and castrate those hogs over there. And like I say, you didn't just catch one hog. You pin the hogs if you're going to do that. And we had our hog meat. And we smoked and cured the meat, you know. And that was about it on eating. Peas, beans, and tomatoes, and onions, and taters.
Watermelon,
cantaloupe.
Charlie, did they have a little escape hole in the hog pen for the hog to get out of after he got the hogs to chase him into the pen, or how did he get out?
You mean the dog to get out?
He jumped the fence. Yeah, he jumped it.
So he'd get the hogs mad at him.
Yeah, he'd follow him.
Get them to follow him in the pen, then he'd get out. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We built wings on them pens across the river, you know,
mm-hmm.
where they, once you got it in that deal, they
funneled them in.
Funneled them on in there. Yeah.
You like some water?
Yeah, I'll take some water. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Charlie, did y'all ever raise any cane?
No. Charles might have said raised the cane.
Sugar cane?
Yeah. We've raised some when we lived down there by Modisette, but we didn't have a syrup mill.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Modisette had a syrup mill, And the whole community worked at CERT mill, mostly women and kids, you know. And you got paid in CERT. That was your winter CERT. And that pile of cane that was stripped and trimmed to go through the...
Chews?
The crusher.
Uh-huh.
Was as big as a house, you know. I mean, there was lots of sugar cane there.
Did your mother use that cane to cook with any?
Oh, yeah. Make syrup cake, tea cakes. Real good.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Four. I had one sister and three brothers.
One sister. Where were you in the birth order?
I was the last one.
The last, the youngest of all of them,
yeah.
Huh? Okay. So how much older were you, was your oldest sibling?
Let's see, I'm 77, she'd be about 90 now.
Okay. So about 12, 13 years?
It seems like she's older than that. Something like that, I guess.
Okay.
You know.
Travis was about 2 years older than
you. Yeah, Travis is 2 years older, say approximately, and Grover was...
Grover?
Grover.
Grover, okay.
Was a couple of years over.
And LT.
LT was, he went in the Army in 41 or 42. He was 18. And I guess I was about six. So he was 5 years older, and Hanley was about 8 or 10, 12.
Grover's still alive?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you had a brother that served in World War II?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He passed away, though.
Okay.
And
not in the war, though, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, in the war, okay.
Yeah, he got wounded. He was in, I believe he was in the Battle of the Bulls.
Battle of the Bulls.
Yeah. He had 5 battle stars.
Hmm.
Major battles.
And what was his name?
LT.
LT.
That was it.
LT. Didn't stand for anything, just LT, huh?
No, he was named after his grandfather, Leroy Thomas.
Leroy Thomas. Okay. So you were old enough then to remember that when he died, right?
When LT died.
When LT died, yeah.
Yeah, LT died about 7 or 8 years ago, didn't he?
No, I'm sorry. The fellow who died in the Battle of the Bulge.
No, you misunderstood that, John. He was just wounded in that.
Oh, okay. He didn't die during the war. Okay,
no.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Tell a little bit more about, I know you told me that in later years you worked for Brown and Root and things like that. Did you, and you said you kind of moved around from job to job and were in Houston a good bit, but was, were you around when the coming of the lakes was occurring, say Lake Sam Rayburn, Toledo Bend? Do you remember those times? What was the feelings amongst the people in the where you grew up?
They didn't care, I don't guess. You know, that was over yonder.
Another world, John.
Yeah. It was farther away then.
Yeah.
Okay.
They went over and hauled logs out of Angelina River bottom.
Okay.
My brother did. And like I say, that was another world over there, and they really didn't care. Now, if it had been on the nature, they'd have been upset.
Okay. Because I know Zavala's not too far away from the impounded waters, but your world was not really even connected to Zavala except for school.
Well, I went to school there and run around in Huntington. I knew everybody in Huntington's Valor back then when I was a kid, and now I hardly know anybody. It's you feel like a stranger when you go there, you know. And it's amazing how, I don't remember how many stores there was in Valor when we was going to school, Dick, but there was several. and several cafes.
Yeah.
And look at it now. You barely get gasoline on one end of town, on the other end of town, that's it. It's not much there anymore. But there's a lot of people lives around. Mm-hmm. I guess special occasions they come out.
Walmart's too close now.
Yeah. Yeah, Walmart's too close. I hate to say that, but I go there too. But one more thing, you were talking about what we used the timber for on our place. Daddy would make cross ties with a broad axe.
Hand-hewn?
Yeah.
Cross ties.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever help in that?
I helped him cut the trees and saw them up. I never did.
Cut them to length, but not the hewing.
I never did do none of the hewing, but I...
Why is that?
Well...
Too young, or...?
I might have been too young. And Daddy had to make his ties real pretty. And my brother-in-law, old brother-in-law, he made ties too.
And who was that?
Jeff Curry.
Curry.
Uh-huh. He made ties, and he just, whatever, if he figured he could sell that tie, he didn't make it pretty, just, you know, hew it down real pretty.
Now was there, did a pretty tie... And we're talking about cross ties for the railroad. Did a pretty tie get more money?
No.
It didn't.
That was Jeff's theory. That you was wasting your time when you took all that pains with it. But Daddy was particular.
I guess there was basic size dimensions you kind of shot for. Mm-hmm. 6x8 or something like that?
6x8, 7x8, 7x9.
Okay.
And, I forget the rest of the lengths, I guess.
So would he make them all there nearby on your land or other people's land?
On our land.
And then would the railroad people come get them, or did he have to haul them?
You had to haul them to the track, to the yard.
Where would he do that?
To Huntington.
To Huntington. Uh-huh. Okay. So it was for the Southern Pacific or Texas and New Orleans?
I guess that would be Southern Pacific.
TNNO at that time.
TNNO. They had that yard at Huntington.
Yes, sir.
Right there where Dominic's garage is. All that, where that old track run across right there. The tie yard was right there.
Now, how many ties would he make? How many would he take in a load? Just as many as the... Would he have to have
truck, whatever it feasible for the truck to come pick up, you know, whatever.
Okay, so somebody had to come... He didn't have his own truck then. Okay.
But in later years...
Would he borrow a truck and drive it himself, or somebody to come get it?
No, okay. He generally hired somebody to come get them. Yeah. Okay. Brother-in-law generally had a truck.
So again, how many cross ties?
Probably 40.
About 40 out of the trip?
About 40 back then.
You remember about what he got in pay for that?
No, I don't. Okay. Not much.
LT later had his own truck and everything.
Yeah, LT had his own truck. I never did get into that.
Was this something that was just going on year-round, or was there certain times of year when the railroads are just kind of waited for the railroads?
No, you can make the ties anytime, year-round.
So there was always a market for them then?
Right. Okay. And then timber, farming was about all they had.
Yeah, for cash, for money, it was timber and cotton, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess fish.
And your livestock, you know.
Yeah. You said your dad delivered fish and was paid for that.
But sometimes that fishing got pretty bummy. You know, I never figured that out. You remember it was two or three years there, several years there, you couldn't catch no fish. When we was going to have them fish fries at school, you know, for the FFA.
Yeah.
You couldn't get no fish.
Well, if you remember, Charlie, we were growing up in the 50s, and that terrible drought started right in there. So that had a lot to do with part of that.
What year did you graduate, Mr. Donovan?
54.
54? One year after Charles,
yeah. You remember them big old letters on top of the school, seniors 53?
How many people were in your graduating class?
Who was the architect of that, Charlie, first?
Dublin Martin.
What are you referring to?
We painted big old letters up on top of the schoolhouse. Seniors 53.
What were they made out of?
The letters? Paint.
Paint? Oh, you just painted them all.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was hard to get off, too. And we was pretty mischievous at school. We didn't damage no property. That was as close to damaging property as you get. But we had fun going to school. And
kids were a lot rougher and tougher than they are now.
Yeah. We might go swimming, take off, go swimming for half a day. You stay in swimming half a day and then go work that evening. And things like that. But school was fun.
What was the school year then? Nowadays they start school last
September,
week or two of August.
September to, they try to get you out in May, wouldn't they, do?
Yeah. Did y'all wait till after cotton picking time to go to school?
No, we never was late, but some people were.
The Bentons, particularly them
boys. And Knowles.
They
farmed big time for Mr. Barge.
Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't come to school until after the cotton was done.
Two weeks. Most of the time it was 2 to 3 weeks. But that was all right.
I know we have some records, you know, we're talking 100 years ago, but school didn't start till September 30th.
Well, I think when we first started the school, and I'm not sure about this, but I think the latter part of September was when school started back then as well.
Mm-hmm. See, nowadays it's... August. It's always been in August, and they're going, seems like, longer and longer.
Yeah.
Guyball this year went all the way into June, after Memorial Day. But so I was just curious, when that changed. Because like I said, I know 100 years ago, they just waited for everybody to do the cotton, and, no use having school when nobody's going to be there.
Well, that year I went at Shawnee Ferry, the superintendent, he had us to come on Saturday to get us out before we get in the fields. That was his theory. He said they needed everybody on the farm. And we'd have to go on Saturdays through the winter to make up them school days. See. Mr. Travis. Hines Travis was his name.
Charles, how would y'all load those log trucks or logs back in those days?
We loaded them with them horses.
How did
and team,
do that?
Well, you put a chain to each bolster of your logs, and you carried that chain under the log and back over, and you had another chain come across, and you hooked into that yoke, I guess you'd call it, and it rolled that chain that log up in skid poles. You had two skid poles. And if you didn't hook it right, well, one side of your log would get ahead of the other one, and you'd have to back up.
Had to be balanced.
Yeah, had to balance it. And
what was the command? You remember the shouts and hollers and things to get the horses to go forward, go back?
Get up, whoa, gee, and haw.
Okay. Describe for our listeners what each one of those meant.
Well, get up means to go, and whoa means stop. Gee, you turn to the right, and haw, you go to the left. And,
That was just a language you knew growing up.
You knew that, I guess, the time you could walk. And, some horses would mind and some wouldn't. Especially if there's a kid driving them and they thought they could over, they'd overpower that kid.
So I guess they were generally responded differently to different operators. Huh?
Right. Well, for example, Daddy could pick up them rings, them horses would do the right thing. Most of them knew what to do. But I could pick up them rings and I might have trouble with them. They might just ignore me. We had an old cultivator. We pulled them horses. And I had them out in the middle of the field. I was plowing the corn. And they got to doing wrong, and I got to fighting them horses, and they just turned around in the middle of that field and started to the house. Here I am plowing corn down.
Oh, my goodness.
What did your dad say? Did he find out?
That's what I was dreading.
Did he ever whip you, Charles?
Yeah.
What did he whip you with? Be honest.
Well, he cut him a switch about 6 foot long, and he worked out pretty good. You didn't want no more. But he didn't do that. I never did get but one like that. He used that razor strap sometime. He picked you up pretty good with it.
What about your mom? What about her disciplinary actions? Did she ever...
She liked them peach tree switches.
Peach tree switches.
Switches, they wrap around your legs. She'd tear you up.
Make you pull your pants leg up ever?
No, she wouldn't do that. I had them rolled up anyway.
Did any of your older brothers and your older sister try to discipline you?
Oh, we had our fights just like everybody else. But my sister and my oldest brother, they were gone from home.
Okay.
And then Grover, myself and Grover and Travis were raised together. They were six of us, weren't they? Yeah. No. Five. Anyway, it was kind of like two separate families.
Right.
But they were all already grown, gone home when I started coming on up. And
did they live, when they were married and had their families, did they live nearby or did they move off? Or?
Well, sometimes LT, he'd work in Houston. He worked construction some, but most of the time they all lived within 20 miles of each other.
When was it that you got a job moving off?
Well,
graduated from high school in 53.
Well, went to the Army then.
Went to the Army, okay.
Yeah. I got out 55.
Okay.
And
Was Korea still going on
yeah.
when you joined? Okay.
Yeah. They quit fighting 2 weeks later.
So they'd
already quit fighting when I got there.
When you got there.
I did go there.
you did go to Korea,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you see any combat?
No.
Okay.
No.
How many of your classmates and things like that from that general area might have joined up?
Well, myself and Cecil Martin, Curtis Craven. I believe that's all that went about then.
Was there a draft, or did you?
There was a draft then, and
okay.
Cecil and I just went up there and told them just to send us our notice. We was ready to go.
You're ready to go. Well, why was that?
Well, for instance, I went up to several places, and Lufkin applied for a job, and they told me to come back when I satisfied the draft. So I didn't know, to tell you the truth, but I didn't know what to do. I'd been to school 12 years, and somebody else telling me what to do, and we really weren't prepared.
Yeah.
And so I just said, I'll just go on in the Army. And that's what I did. and got out.
And then you had people still telling you what to do.
Yeah. Didn't have to worry about nothing.
Well, how was that? Any experiences you care to share about that, about your Army days?
Okay. I wouldn't take nothing for it. I had a good time in the Army. I mean, they sometimes it got serious.
You got to see the other side of the world anyways, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
What about, was that your first time to really be, well, not just physical distance, but maybe seeing people from other lifestyles, other backgrounds? What about that, interacting with the rest of the world outside of your neighborhood?
Well, you take Korea, for instance, that's one of the oldest countries in the world.
Korea, yeah.
And they still live in grass huts. Mm. And that was, it was just amazing to me, you know.
So you interacted and saw the Korean people?
Oh, yeah, we'd go to town. They were friendly. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't figure out why they wouldn't... I don't know the word to pull out there to why they want to advance more than what they were.
Yeah. What about your fellow soldiers? Just people that you met, boot camp, and your unit, and all that. I mean,
well,
anybody from big cities that you met? Or?
Oh, yeah. There's some of every kind. It's just like any gathering. You know, there's no two people the same. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how well you get along. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Did you and Doubler stay together by any chance?
No, we didn't. When we separated at San Antonio, and then I run into him. He went to Korea also. And I run into him when we was getting ready to come home. That was the only time I ran into him over there. And Curtis run into him when we was coming home. And that was it. That's the only ones I run into.
So what'd you do when you came back? I guess you registered in Lufkin? Is that where you joined up?
Yep.
For the Army? Okay. And then when you got out of the Army, now you didn't have anybody telling you what to do again.
Well, I played for a while. And then I started working construction.
And what was your first job in construction? Who did you work for?
I worked for Brown & Root.
Brown & Root. Out of Houston?
Yeah, but we was up at Striker Creek, I believe that was the first one.
Striker Creek? Okay.
On that firehouse up there. And I was a helper.
Helper? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you where you learned welding. I know you did a lot of welding later. Did you learn anything, any trade that helped you when you were in the Army?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you got just a construction job, I guess, for Brown & Root?
And then I started helping welders. You know, and they'll teach you.
Okay.
And and I also went to school at Beaumont.
Lamar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you finish there? Did you get a degree?
Yeah, I got a degree. I don't remember where I got a degree in welding or not, but that's what I took.
Okay.
Obviously that and math and English and I went there quite a while. And,
so you lived in Beaumont for a while?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I, as soon as I got to get me a job welding, I quit going.
And when you were in Beaumont going to school, did you have a job also?
Yeah, I worked at a service station daytime.
Okay.
Went to school in the evening.
Okay. Did you continue to hunt and fish during that time? Did you?
Every chance I got.
Every chance you got.
Yeah.
So did you do a lot of that down in the Beaumont area, or did you come back up here?
I still came back up here and
came
did.
Back up here.
Back then, those little wire nets was real popular.
Little wire nets?
Little wire nets, about 18 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And you catch a lot of catfish then. If you wanted to mess a fish, you put one out.
Was the fishing better then or when you were a kid?
It was better then.
Better later?
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that? Were you a better fisherman then, maybe?
Well, I don't know. As kind of like Dick said, we grew up there in the, that big drought started in the late 40s, didn't it? And went on into the 50s. And that might have been, I remember several years there, we just couldn't catch no fish. And there was a, you got a restroom?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we can pause this. Yes, sir. Let's see here. All right, we took a little break there, and now we're back. And, we were just talking a little bit while the recorder was off about maybe some of the other parts of life, living back in that time period. And we're talking about maybe clothes washing and taking baths and things like that. You care to share anything about that, Mr. Havard?
Well, Mama washed on a rub board and boiled clothes under a old wash pot. And you hung them clothes on a clothesline.
What did she use for soap?
Lye soap, mostly.
Did she make that?
She made it herself.
Okay. Tell us how that was made.
Made out with, well, they start out with cracklings with, from,
the grease, or?
Yeah. The cracklings where you cook your grease out.
Okay.
From your hog. And then they use, they add a little lye to it. I don't know how much. And you boil that in that wash pot, and she always tested it with a chicken feather, and it'll when it gets right, it'll eat that chicken feather up. But that lye soap is good, and that was a basic soap for the clothes.
So when they boiled it, we've actually got some pictures of them boiling, lye soap vats and stuff.
Yeah.
But was there a certain consistency or something they were looking for? When did they turn the heat off?
When it got to a certain point, she tested it
with that,
chicken feather.
Feather, okay.
And if it done that feather right,
okay.
That's when you shut it down.
Okay, and what's involved then? Letting it cool off?
Letting it cool off, and then you cut it.
Okay.
You cut it in squares. And then when you take it out of there, you take it out piece by piece. And the rub board was something that's real dirty. You had to rub on the rub board and then rinse it through a couple of tubs of water. And that rinse water, a lot of times, used it for bath water. And it'd be warm in the evening. But,
how often would she wash clothes?
About once a week.
Once a week.
It was an all-day deal.
All day.
I tell you, it was work.
Did you ever help, especially when you were younger?
I built a fire.
Built a fire.
Carried water for and things like that.
Where would you get the water?
Well, we had it there at house. And,
have a well?
We had a well for a while, but that well would go dry. And we'd catch water in some big old vats when it would rain. And then we had a spring down below the house that we could carry water from.
Okay. How would you carry it? Just with your hands?
Yeah,
with buckets?
Yeah, buckets.
Okay.
And which is a poor way to have water. And but it was just a way of life, and you had.
So the rinse water is what you took your baths in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then later years, well...
So you only took a bath once a week?
Mom was pretty particular about that. She, you better not have no dirt behind your ears and your neck.
So you took baths more often?
Yeah. She was real particular about that. But
So I guess the warm water was really good during the winter time.
Yeah, well, you leave it, you draw it up. If sometimes you draw up a tub of water and just leave it outside and let it get warm, you know.
Yeah, warm up by the sun. Yeah.
In other words, then in the wintertime, you'd have to heat some water.
Right.
So it was just a...
So did everybody take a bath in the same water? Or
no.
Different?
No, you use different water. It's just...
But you as the child had to haul it up for everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
We hauled it up
enough for everybody.
You had to get water. That was just part of your chores.
Every day, huh?
Yeah.
Every day.
And then later years, oh, I was already gone from home. Well, they drilled a well. But the water was sulfur water. It had a bad smell to it when it come out of the ground, but you could let it set, and that smell would go away.
Hmm.
And it, you know, the water tasted good, and it was clean water, but it just had a bad smell when it come out of the pipes.
Did your dad, besides the jobs and things that you've already mentioned, did he ever have any type of regular job? Did he ever do some outside, you know, work for a company? You know, like you worked for a company as a welder, a trade. Did he ever do any of that?
Yeah, he worked for Carter some.
Okay.
You know, he hewed those oak piling for him, him and Lee Outlaw, to... they used to build those trestles on those bridges with.
The pilings, the oak, they do them out of oak trees.
Mm-hmm. And then he was a blacksmith for Carter on one job.
Hmm.
And he hauled gas for Gresham Temple, I believe, at one time.
Out of Lufkin?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
deliver gasoline?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
in a truck. He pretty well worked for himself all his life.
Is that pretty much what everybody did in that part of the country?
Yeah. They pretty well did back then when I was a kid. And
was that fairly common then for your generation to be the one that, say, moved off and got work outside of the area?
Well, I guess it started during the war.
World War II?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know...
People moving off.
And, I don't guess the country was ever the same after that.
I know a lot of people, you know, they closed Fastrell down about 41 or so, 1941. And some of the people, you know, wound up around Port Neches and the refineries and things around Beaumont. And some went to the shipyards and even into Orange, the shipyards in Orange. You know, Orange went from like 10,000 to 50,000 population overnight. So was there some of that going on too in your neighborhood?
A lot of them went to, like Orange, worked in the shipyards. Yeah,
worked in the shipyards at Orange.
I remember it, you know. And the women and kids carried on the farm just like they was there. You know, Daddy didn't go. He stayed home on that. But a lot of them did go, and
just sort of start new. Did some of them start like your generation? Did some of them move down there and stay down there?
No. You mean like the Orange?
Yeah, or Beaumont, or...
Oh, yeah. A lot of them that went and helped build a refinery, hard end, helped operate it, you know, and stayed.
Stayed on and then just started their families down there. But you came back then, right?
I came back.
Okay.
And, I never was able to get a good job around here.
Around here?
I worked several jobs at the paper mill, you know, on construction was pretty good, but I never could, before I started welding, I never could get on at on what I thought was a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So I left here and I moved back in 97.
Okay. Where did you move from?
I was in Houston at the time.
Houston, okay. So you were in Houston for a good while then.
Yeah.
Huh? Mm-hmm. I lived in Houston some of my younger life until 81.
Yeah.
1981. I know it has changed night and day since 81.
Yeah.
But so you lived through a lot of that, you know, in the 80s and 90s you lived there?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
I went back to Houston in about 74, I think.
Okay.
I was living in Dallas, and I decided I'd go back to work for Brown Root.
Brown Root.
So I did, and like I said, Houston has spread out, and they're building all the time. But if a man wants to go to work, he can go to work in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Plenty of jobs, huh?
Well, there's always a job somewhere down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen it pretty bad, but there's generally a work around there somewhere.
So what type of welding did you do? Type of jobs?
I was a pipe welder.
Pipe welder.
Yeah, okay. I worked plant work.
The refineries a lot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Refineries, paper mills, anything.
Did you keep in touch with this part of the country during that time?
I came home periodically.
Okay.
And see mother and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And dad died in 78.
78, okay.
And my mom died in 95.
He told me about washing clothes and taking baths and hauling water and making lye soap. Is there anything else that I've neglected? Again, some of those old ways of growing up, not only during that time period, but just in that part of the country, part neck of the woods, so to speak, that we've kind of missed out on.
Probably I'll think of something after a while.
Talked about fishing a little bit and hunting and just some of the ways.
We hunted back then with a light, with a carbide light.
Mm-hmm. At night.
Mm-hmm. And we made a reflector out of an old T-model lens come out of the headlight. You polish that and it looked like real pretty brass. And that made a good light spot out there for a deer like that, or coons, or whatever you was hunting.
That was light up their eyes, huh?
Yeah, that was the light before the little battery lights came.
Charles, was anybody trapping in there in those days?
Yeah, I forgot that.
Trapping?
Yeah, they all trapped. Most of the grown-ups trapped and sold those coon hides and mink hide and possums.
Coon, mink, and fox.
Coon, mink, and possum.
Possum.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of it's scattered possum. Some of them wouldn't fool with them.
I misunderstood you there, but we've been seeing several foxes in our neighborhood.
Yeah,
I don't remember seeing them very much here, but just the last few years.
Well, they're
they.
You're forcing them out of where they are. They got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Did you remember seeing many foxes when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. We shot everyone we saw.
Shot chicken.
Did they get you chicken?
They get you chicken. They sure did. They were sly.
We even had one up here at the History Center several years back. It's like first year or two here. They would bed down in one of those beds.
Really?
Yeah, and then landscapers started noticing them. And they just bed down there.
We had one raise a litter of puppies underneath our front porch.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that. They never did come back. She never did come back another time,
no.
Somebody probably got her.
So who would the Did your family ever do any trapping?
Daddy trapped every winter when he was younger.
So where would he have sold the coon skins and stuff to?
Well, you had a fur buyer in Lufkin. I don't remember his, I can't pull out his name, the old fur buyer. And then they would, those fur buyers would show up on certain days. And we'd dry them hides. He'd stretch them. Back then, he'd stretch them and dry them and carry them in. But now they carry them in green, you know, what's called green. You just skin them and carry them in. Hmm. They don't, you put it in the freezer now and save it and sell it.
You remember when old man Wes Carnes caught that first coyote?
Yeah.
Caught quite a few hours, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sure did. They, you ever see Wesley?
Once a year.
So what about the coyote?
I don't know the whole story about it. But that old man he's talking about was a pretty sly old man. He was, he never did work for nobody but himself, did he?
Yeah. He was a good trapper. But nobody had ever seen a coyote before in this part of the world. And I always attributed their arrival at the same time, or, you know, they're about the time the chicken growers came in. And the chicken growers were tossing their chickens just out the back door, you know, when they died, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's had a whole lot to do with the speedy development of coyote population, because the red wolves were gone about that time, and just a little bit before that. They caught the last red wolves in Chambers County and in the 70s, I believe, and the coyotes came in right after that. Or right before that, they caught the coyotes came in, but the coyotes arrived in the 50s. But they caught the last red wolves in Chambers County in the 70s, I think.
You remember back in the 70s there when they said there was no more red wolves in Texas?
Yeah.
I was coming through the edge of Big City, cut through from Huffman to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I cut through them back roads. There was one that high across the road in front of me.
He's showing about, what, 3 feet tall?
Yeah, he was tall, big.
You reckon couldn't have been a coyote?
No.
You see, one thing the Parks and Wildlife did at that time was they trapped those animals. And or no, it's U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and they measured their skulls and did all kind of tests, mm-hmm. and everything to determine whether they had hybridized, whether the coyotes and the red wolves had crossed. And they found it was very difficult to sort out the pure red mm-hmm. wolves at that time. That was the last ones they mm-hmm. had, and that's the same ones they introduced up into the Smoky Mountains and those islands off of Carolina and places.
What about, you mentioned baptisms and things like that. Did your family attend church?
Yeah.
Okay. What church did y'all go to?
We went to the Baptist.
Okay.
But,
did it have a name?
Help me out here, Dave.
Missionary Baptist, First Baptist?
No, it didn't belong to no association, Lambert Chapel.
Lambert Chapel.
And what was I guess different back then about now, but you know, you kind of had church with a work, and then you'd have a revival.
Church with what? I'm sorry?
If you didn't have church 3 or 4 times a day or just any time because people were working their crops and things, and then they'd have church on Sunday, one time on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you had a revival, and you'd look up there, and they'd be five or six preachers sitting on that bench, pew. Every one of them from a different church. They'd be some Pentecostal, Church of Christ, Methodist, whoever was in.
Available.
Huh? Available. And every one of them would get up and make a speech. And you'd think you was going to starve to death.
Now, these revivals, were they on Sundays also, or did they do it at
They
at
do
nights?
Them through the week
through
at
the
night.
Weeks, okay, at night.
Yeah. They give you time, get you flying done, or whatever was mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm.
Would these be like under a tent?
No, or they had a. We'd have them old Brush Arbor meetings back then.
Uh-huh.
I went to several of them.
Describe that. Tell about that a little bit. Just
well, they just set some posts and down through area, and they'd run them poles up there, and then they'd cover the whole tops with pine tops and. Whatever make the shade.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, and the last Brush Arbor I saw was in that community back in the
day. Is that right?
That was the last
one. Well, the last one I remember was at Sulphur Springs. And like you say, they just have that big open door, open, what do you call it? Atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Open atmosphere church.
Mm-hmm.
And
come on, come all.
Come
huh?
on, come all. But that's what I was getting at about when, like, we'd have that church up there at Lambert's Chapel and have them, well, people from over here, right out here at Beulah.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be some preachers from Beulah over there, mm-hmm. down there. Sayre, Savannah. Wherever they had transportation, that was the biggest thing back then was transportation.
Transportation.
And,
did the church ever have a bus or anything? Or did they ever borrow the school's bus? You never did volunteer the school's bus for that?
No. They didn't have much. School bus wasn't quite as available back then. And
so how would people that would come to these revivals, would they come from far away?
They come in wagons, cars,
that's
horses.
That's what I asked you, how they got there.
Yeah, that's right.
Wagons,
and,
cars,
and that,
horses.
That old church house would be full now. And Shawnee Prairie, people would come down there from Shawnee Prairie. And it went the same way when they'd have church at Sayre, like they'd have a revival. But people from up in there would go down there. The name of the church didn't make no difference.
Yeah.
Not only did people take their religion more seriously, there were not any other social events to attend either, and that's where you got to visit.
Yeah, you saw people that you hadn't seen in a long time. That was and sometimes sometime during that time, everybody might carry a covered dish or something.
Yeah, so you have dinner on the ground, kind of thing.
You know, and,
did the churches do any kind of cemetery workings and things like that? Did y'all ever, you remember any of those?
No, we had them cemetery workings just
in the community, not necessarily involving the church.
Yeah.
Okay. How often would that be done?
Once a year, mostly.
Once a year.
We used to have that have a reunion. Excuse me. And we'd go down there and we'd work our area. Well, y'all would come, you'd work your area, and the whole cemetery would wind up clean. And then everybody comes to that reunion. That was another one of them social deals. And like I say, there'd be some people would come on a horse, some people might come in a wagon, some old cars and things, some new cars, some old, mostly old. And that was another thing. It was, like you said, was a social.
Mm-hmm.
That you hadn't seen people, you might see people you hadn't seen in 10 years.
What would the kids do at these gatherings?
We'd go off getting creek somewhere.
Fight.
Everything else. Anything we could do. We'd get far enough away from the grown-ups they couldn't hear us.
And you've got to keep in mind that there were people there at those events essentially, that was all the people they saw all year long. Mm-hmm. They didn't go into town. They didn't even go to Zavala. They'd have stuff brought into them and that sort of thing.
It's
just hard to imagine.
You didn't waste a whole lot of money on gasoline. It was cheap, but most people didn't have a car. If you did, the battery was down on it. You knew Joe Dax, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a pretty good-sized family. And Freddie, you know, Freddie was, something happened to him when he was born. He's a little bit mentally slow. So he come up there at that old church and one night and, of course, had this old car and battery was down on it. They had to push it to start it. And somebody told Freddie, said, "You get back, son, you might get hurt." And Cecil, his brother, said, "Let him push." Said, "He can push as good as you can." I know, well, forget that. Cecil wanted somebody to push it.
And, all they needed was beef, wasn't it?
Yeah, he just wanted some beef on that old car. It was quite a bit different church meetings than what they are now.
Hot sometime.
Everybody had one of them Gibson and Metcalf and
that's right.
Fans.
So pretty much everybody in the community attend church?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Like he said, you went there and you might not go nowhere else for a month or two. And
Have you read Miriam Havard Tatum's writings and books and things? Would you kind of agree with a lot of what she said? Or?
Yeah, I agree with a lot she said, but she left a lot out. You know.
Tell us what she left out.
Well, I can't.
I'm not trying to get you to
without.
Just some of the things that we can capture that we don't know about. Is what I'm after.
I probably can't do that
to critique her book or anything.
What I mean is that there's several people she left out that she didn't get in.
Yeah, just and, wasn't able to work everything.
Yeah,
in.
But I know it was a publishing deadline probably caused that.
But I mean, if you had the opportunity to tell more than what she told, what would you, use this opportunity to tell this next generation or even today's generation some of the things that they need to know about or hear about or that she...
I'd have to read the book again.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
I read it a long time ago.
Yes, sir. Yeah. But I remember she talked a lot about the gatherings and the social events and how big that was and, you know, the church revivals. And we've even seen, especially from Manning, and of course it's typical of a lot of communities, but, you know, the newspapers would write up some of the revival meetings.
Right.
Sometimes the pastors of the revival would write it up, you know, and they would tell about just the current, you know, what's been happening.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, it was a big social event as well as... you know, spreading the gospel, evangelism, and things like that. But I just wanted to, you know, use the opportunity if we could to not neglect anything. I'm like I said, I'm sure there's lots of stuff we've left out. But can you think of anything else, Mr. Donovan, at least right now that while we have Mr. Havard here?
I've probably left out a whole lot.
Well, it's hard to talk about. You know, that amount of time in just an hour or so, you know, condensing it down significantly. But I thought we did a pretty good job of relating, you know, just the different life experiences. Yeah. And, you know, we covered a lot of good territory, I think.
Well, if this other old boy would have come with me, he lived a little further down the river. He lived in Sarin.
Sarin, okay.
Yeah.
And that's that...
At Berlin?
Carl Fan?
No. Carl Fan was a little further down than he was.
Oh, okay. So who are you talking about now? Berlin?
Berlin Havard.
Berlin Havard.
He was going to come with me.
Oh, he was going to come. Okay.
He's got back problems or something. And
okay. Well, I guess if there's nothing else you care to say or add, we'll turn the thing off. Did you have something else you wanted to add? Or?
Not necessarily. Okay. I just, like you say, you start thinking at a time like this, and you seem like your mind goes blank. And I'll be driving down the road, and I'll think about a lot of things I
yes,
should have
told. Yes, sir. Well, if you think about enough of those, then just give us a holler, and we can do another one.
Okay.
Well, again, I sure appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.